If you listen to baby boomers talk, you often hear a lot of wistful reminiscing about how they grew up without bike helmets or seat belts, often free enough that they got the run of the neighborhood. Mom just said, be home by dinner. The reminiscing gets a further boost from the sharp contrast with parenting today, in which children are helmeted and buckled up and often heavily scheduled, taken from ballet to karate to basketball, for example. Today's guest took a look at the modern landscape and wrote a book with writer David Tabatsky. The book is called The Overparenting Epidemic: Why Helicopter Parenting is Bad for Your Kids and Dangerous for You Too. George S. Glass is an MD and psychiatrist from Houston. In addition to clinical practice, he has also served as associate professor of psychiatry at three different medical schools, so he knows from whence he speaks. George Glass, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
We'll guess you've run across a few helicopter parents in your practice. Who generally tends to come to you, parents or kids or both?
Well, you know, kids don't come. Parents usually bring their kids, or parents are sent by somebody else, like this, someone in the school or another counselor may say, you know, you need to go talk to somebody about why you're doing such and such. And that's usually what happens. But, you know, what we're talking about is oftentimes not that people come to me in my practice, but that it comes out in their life. And I'll give you a little background. I wrote a book about blending families, which is called Blending Families Successfully. And, you know, it's about the fact that more than 50% of children in a country grow up not with both parents most of the time. You know, more than 50% of people get divorced. They grow up with, you know, step families, you know, other combinations. And the publishers came to us and said, you know, we want you to think about doing a book on helicopter parents. And in a way, some of the aspects of blending families or single-parent families are very similar to what's happened in this era with you know, helicopter parents or over-parenting, where there's a lot of pressure to get it right or to ensure that your child gets a leg up on everybody else, or to make sure that that they don't fail, you do everything you can to make sure that they don't fail, or that they're successful, which success is always defined in these situations as what the parents think is successful, of course. So that's what led up to it. And usually the parents don't come and say, hey, I'm concerned. The kids don't come because, you know, kids really can't negotiate that for themselves. But it plays out everywhere from parents working to get their child into the right preschool, because if they're in the right preschool, ideally they'll get into the right lower school, ultimately into the right college, and then into, you know, the right grad school or career. It plays out where parents help their kids with homework or do the kids' projects so that the child never really gets to feel like it's their project. They never really take responsibility for what happens, and it undermines their sense of their own self-worth. You know, if their parent has to do something for them, the message is, you know, you're not good enough to do it yourself. Somebody has to do this for you. And it plays out where people get coaches for, you know, T-ball, so that their kid will be have a leg up on everybody else and will be a better player, be picked, which means they'll get into the better college. I mean, it sounds ludicrous, but that really is what happens and what we're seeing.
So it sounds like it's really a concern on the part of the parents that their kids are in a more competitive environment than perhaps they were when they were kids, and therefore need to be given a few extra shoves here and there.
Well, it's more than it's that, but it's also the idea with parents that you know, a lot of the parents that we see tend to be people who are, you know, successful themselves professionally. They may have waited longer to have children so that they're in their 30s. We oftentimes see you know, women who have been very successful attorneys or corporate financial people or things like that, where they're putting in 60 or 80 hours a week or more for the company, all of a sudden they decide, oh my God, the clock's running out. I have to have a, I want a kid. And they have one, but then it gets to be, it has to be perfect because you're only going to have one or two, not like previously where you'd have a bunch. And that one has to come out right. You have to get it right the first time. So that's all part of the process. And then every time you pick the paper up, you read about jobs are being outsourced, the economy's tight, people worry that their children are not going to have the opportunities that they have. So that, again, there's pressure to make them be successful.
We got a bit of a chuckle here at some of the country-by-country terms, like instead of helicopter parents, in some countries they're referred to as curling parents.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, the notion when we started was, you know, it's really just a phenomena of in the United States. But, in fact, you know, it occurs all over the world. You know, in China, where for a time they were limited to one child per family, it's the same kind of pressure. Or in... And we've got examples of that, or you know the issues in you know Hong Kong or places like that, or the you know it's an issue in Russia where and in Europe where you know, if your child isn't on the right track early, they go into the trade school track then.
I should explain the term curling parents. It's the ice game curling that you see during the Winter Olympics. And indeed, the curling parents are the ones who sweep all the obstacles out of their child's way. So similar concepts, just by different names in other countries. We'll come back and talk more with George S. Glass, M.D., about the book he co-wrote with George Tabatsky, The Overparenting Epidemic. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk to George and take your phone calls and emails in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the psychiatrist George Glass, George S. Glass from Houston. He is the principal author of a book called The Overparenting Epidemic, Why Helicopter Parenting is Bad for Your Kids and Dangerous for You, Too. You can join us as we talk about parenting in the modern age. 800-838-3760 is our number anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. George, I'm just curious to know if there's any research to indicate that in general terms, each generation of parents rejects the parenting style of the previous generation.
You know, I'm not sure that people reject it. I think what happens is... Our role models are our parents, and that's how we learn to parent, by what was done to us. You know, it's internalized. You know, it's always a shock for parents when they are in the middle of, when they suddenly have children and they find that they had that aha moment with, oh, my God, I'm doing the same thing to my kids that my parents did to me that I hated or that I said I'd never do. So I think that's an internal, that's a role modeling internalization thing. I think what we've seen that's different now is because of the breakup of the families and the fact that there are so many divorces, kids grow up feeling like they don't have a good role model. I mean, I see in my practice. And my practice is adults, late, you know, adolescents, and a lot of people with drug and alcohol problems. And you can date the start of a child's drug and alcohol issues oftentimes to when their parents break up. And they don't go out to do drugs to spite their parents. It becomes a way to try and when families break up, kids feel like it's their fault. No matter what you tell them, no matter how many times you tell them, we love you, it's not your fault, mommy and daddy don't give up, whatever, kids always feel like if they were smarter, prettier, thinner, cuter, or something, it wouldn't have happened. So they develop a self-image, self-esteem problem. And the drugs and alcohol kick in, and they start to use that sometimes. But they also grow up with a sense that I want to have a family not like the broken family I have. So in a way, they sometimes go overboard to try and give their child all the gifts or benefits that they didn't have. And that's part of what happens. But, and the times are different. Part of what we looked at, part of what I looked at is, my parents grew up in the 20s, the teens in the 20s. So I've heard stories about, they'd go out and play with makeup toys, and nobody knew where they were. I'm sure that horrible things happened to kids then, but, the media didn't go crazy over it. I grew up in the 40s and the 50s, and you never saw an adult. You get on your bike on a Saturday morning, you'd ride to the park and with everybody else, and in the fall you'd play football, and in the spring you'd play baseball, and you never saw an adult, period. My first set of kids grew up, as I said, we've got a blended family, in the 70s and the 80s. And, by that time, they're coaches, they're parents who are coaching. I've got another set of kids who grew up in the, essentially the 90s, late 80s and the 90s. And, again, there's more involvement, more scheduling. All of a sudden, there are play dates. There's fear that if your kid runs, again, the media adds to it by all the stories of the kid who gets kidnapped in the men's room when they went by themselves or that kind of stuff. And now I've got grandkids. And, I can see that, parents are well-meaning, and they want the best for their children. But there's a sense that they're overscheduled. You can't just let a kid be a kid. We used to sit around. We'd go out and early in the morning on our bikes, and we'd come back by dinner time. And, parents didn't call the cops. They didn't put trackers on your bike. You didn't have a cell phone that you were supposed to call back every hour to make sure that your parents knew that you were okay. It was a different era, and I think some of it's made worse by all the electronic stuff, the texting, the phones, all that kind of thing, which is like an umbilical cord to parents in both ways.
Constant communication, for sure. Well, let's take a call here. We have John and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. George S. Glass, the principal author of The Overparenting Epidemic.
Hi. First, I just have to mention that I'm amazed. I worked in a high-stress place for years, and I was impressed by how adaptable and how clever and good the young people are. So sometimes we can diss on them, but, boy, they were more adaptable than I was. But my question for you was, you introed your piece here with the kind of people who become helicopter parents are, quote, highly successful people, lawyers and accountants who worked 60 or 80 hours a week. And if even you view 80-hour-a-week work schedules as, quote, highly successful, it's already kind of sending this message that, overachieve, overdo, overschedule is successful. So I was wondering if you meant that or if it was kind of an inadvertent phrase that reflects society more than your beliefs.
Oh, no. I think that's societal. I mean, while I pulled out the stereotype because a lot of the people we talked to were in private, were private school college counselors, heads of school, private school, daycare places. It's the same phenomena with charter schools where, people who are relatively low income, but see that education is an important thing for their children will push to get their child into the right, into the right charter school or into the right, magnet school. I'm not being critical of that. What I'm just saying is it's a different phenomena. Their definition of success and our societal definition of success now is financial. primarily. The amount of stuff you have. I mean, there's no, it's unusual for somebody who wants to be a craftsman to be lauded for that. You know, if your kid says, I don't want to go to college, I want to be a, you know, I want to be a cabinet maker, or I want to be, you know, something else, you know, most parents' response is, you have to do something, you know, how are you going to make a living? Living meaning not median income, but, you know, something else. So that's really what I'm talking about. You know, it's societal. It's not my value system. We're just commenting on that's what the push has been.
John, thanks for the question. There's a big concept right here in the introduction of the book, though, which is the idea of allowing kids to get things wrong. Is that sort of a lost art?
I don't think it's not a lost art. It's a fear. You know, the idea is that we all learn, we all make mistakes. And the issue is not making mistakes. I mean, my father used to say, you know, that's why they put erasers on pencils. But it's what do you learn from the mistake so that you've learned something and you do it differently the next time. And that's as true for parents helping a child negotiate a problem on the playground or a problem in school, you know, explaining to them, you know, what might you do, how would you approach it differently instead of picking up the phone and calling the teacher or calling the headmaster. And saying, you know, I'm paying you tuition. My child shouldn't be having these kind of problems or a variation on that. So the idea of letting kids make mistakes, learn from your mistakes, and having free time to do that. You know, if you run from activity to activity, you never get to think about what you want. And then it plays out, in, you know, among the stories that we hear again and again are from college counselors in schools who say, you know, a child goes in, a 17-year-old kid goes into the college guidance counselor, and the college guidance counselor says, and where do you want to go to college? And they say, well, my mommy says I should go to da-da-da-da-da. The kid is clueless about, you know, what's a fit, what are they like, where should they go. They're directed.
Dr. George S. Glass is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a psychiatrist in Houston, and the principal author of a book called The Overparenting Epidemic, Why Helicopter Parenting is Bad for Your Kids and Dangerous for You, Too. You may join this discussion on the Jefferson Exchange. Let's jump in and talk about this. 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So there is a quiz here for people to figure out if they are overparenting. What are some of the key attributes then, George?
Well, I think the key attributes are, can you let your child make a mistake? I mean, we've got a couple of questionnaires in the book. They're you know, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, they're reality. You know, how often do you do your kid's kindergarten project? You know, if the project isn't as good as what you would have done, what do you do? Do you let it be their project, or do you jump in and do that? Do you continue to, you know, and do you continue to text or communicate with your child throughout the day in school? I mean, it's a two-way issue, and that's why it's bad for parents and bad for kids. Kids get to feel like they're not self-sufficient. They're somehow defective. They can't rely on their own resources anymore. They have to have somebody to back them up, their parent. Parents, in turn, feel like, in part, they to have this child, and now they don't have anything else. So the child becomes a central focus to their life, what they want to do. And that's what happens. So, you know, having to back off, letting your child make a mistake. They're going to make mistakes. There's nothing the matter with that. Sitting down with them and saying, hey, you know, what happened? What'd you learn from them? Listen to your child rather than jump in and try to take charge or throw your weight around. That's really what we're talking about.
Seems like part of this becomes peer pressure that the parents feel, and it comes both from their observations and from their kids. And so on one hand, you would have the parents thinking, well, I see other parents doing this. And on the other hand, you'd have kids saying, well, Tommy's mom lets them do this. So how do you find that place within yourself to be the kind of parent you think you should be?
Well, I think that goes back to the question you asked earlier about, you know, is the parent, are parents different in each generation? I think if you grow up and you're not sure of yourself and what you think is right or wrong, then you're more susceptible or vulnerable to when somebody says, you know, I signed my son up for Little League fencing and piano lessons, but Thursday I'm not sure what to do yet. You feel like, oh, my God, you know, that kid's going to get ahead. Not that anybody who does Little League is ever going to end up in the major leagues or that it's going to make much difference on their application to college, but the idea that the social pressure that you should do that, that because all the other parents are doing that, you need to do that instead of saying, hey, you know, when I was a kid, it wasn't so terrible I come home after school or I go to somebody's house, we just hang around. I got my schoolwork done, you know, I could have done better, or I could have done worse, but I mucked through and moved on. And that's lost now. And the pressure comes in things, again, 30 years ago, the idea was if you went to college and you got a degree, that gave you a significant bump from somebody who just had a high school degree in terms of finances, in terms of career choices. Now it's not just college, but everybody goes to the U.S. News World Report rankings of colleges. So it's not just going to college. It's you got to go to one of the colleges that's ranked in the top 10 or 20 or an Ivy or you know, you failed. And then if you don't go to the right ranked college, you're not going to get into a good, you know, law, medical, MBA, or some other program. And then you'll just be a college graduate. Like, that's a dead end is the way it's presented. And I think that doesn't allow for creativity. I mean, if you think about it, the people, if you go back to the question he was asked earlier about, you know, society and materialism, you know, Steve Jobs has a great commencement speech at Stanford where he talked about he never finished college, and his life was sort of a bunch of stumbles till he figured out what he wanted to do. You know, it's the same thing, you know, Zuckerberg, the Facebook guy, Gates, they didn't finish college. They stumbled into something that was interesting to them starting early on, and they played it out. So it's not about just finishing college because your parents want you to. It's trying to find what you want to do, and the only way you do that is if you have downtime. You know, a lot of the great writings came from people who were very depressed for a period of time before they finally created. And I think if you're so busy programming your children, they never get to do that.
I was reading recently about the fact that boredom can be proven to spur creativity because you're looking for something there to fill the boredom, and it'll goose you into something good. Let's take another call. Here's Pam in Dexter. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with George Glass, the principal author of The Overparenting Epidemic.
Hi. Well, I can barely hear you, but I too read that article about boredom and creativity. I was thinking, you know, when I was a kid, I had five brothers, and you know, I was allowed to wander all over the place by myself in the woods and swamps and cemeteries and farms, and I do think that that gave me a huge amount of independence and self-esteem, kind of knowing that I could take care of myself. And but you know, when you have six kids and one mother, it tends to be like, okay, you kids go out and play, you know. But these smaller families, I think that is what is making the helicopter parents, because if you only have one child, you're going to put all your energy into that one child, and you're going to, it's stifling what these parents do. I see them, I work with parents and children, and it really is, it's too bad, because I just feel like I was so lucky to have that childhood where I got to roam and hear the bell ring at 5 o'clock for dinner, and you know, the kids come home from all four corners. And so I just wonder how much the family size plays into all of this.
Good question. Thanks for that, Pam.
I think that's a great comment, you know, and it's true. The idea that, you know, if you have a bunch of kids, you don't have time. You know, it's sort of like you can't wait for them to go find something to do. But, you know, when you just have one or two and you have to get it right, or that's the feeling. And getting it right means the right preschool. It's not getting it right means are they happy when they grow up? And, you know, do they have healthy relationships with people? That's really what getting it right ought to be.
You say that good parents practice benign neglect, but how do you know it's benign?
You know, the part of what I think does not happen in this era as much as it should is that people don't talk. They don't communicate. They don't interact with each other. What they do is they tell or they direct. So, you know, if you talk to your child or you listen to them, where there's a problem, and ask them how they see it, what they think about. Now we're a generation of fixers. Sometimes just hearing what somebody has to say is important.
Huh, listening above taking action. All right, we'll talk more about that with George Glass. He's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, with the principal author of The Overparenting Epidemic. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with George and your phone calls and emails in a minute five. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is the psychiatrist George S. Glass. He is the principal author of a book called The Overparenting Epidemic, Why Helicopter Parenting is Bad for Your Kids and Dangerous for You, Too. The concept of perhaps letting kids make mistakes and benign neglect are some of the central themes of the book. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the way kids are parented today and what might be done to make adjustments to that. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760 to reach us by phone. If you'd like to send an email, send that to jx@jeffnet.org. The expectations of parenting in the 21st century and the sense of some authority to turn to, is there really any parallel to Dr. Spock's baby book for this generation of parents?
Yeah, I don't think so. You know, I think that, you know, Dr. Spock's stuff is still valid in a lot of ways. I think what's happened is... you know, there's been a proliferation with the internet and the media stuff. There's been a proliferation of experts, so that you know, the old story used to be the people who know the most about raising your children are bachelors and spinsters, people who don't have any kids who can tell you what you should do because they have no experience. But now there's so many variations of people telling you what to do or how to do it. And I don't know that there's anything that's really helpful other than talking to friends, talking to seeing what other people do, and you know, trying to go fall back on your gut, but also listen to your parents, listen to your kids. I mean, kids always push. That's a given. It's like, you know, people push on their income tax, kids push. You know, everybody else stays out till 3 in the morning, why can't I? Or everybody else has 6 Snickers bars a day, why can't I? Well, you know that's not true. And at the same time, when you're in a place where if you grew up, you know, somewhat poor, and you can buy 6 Snickers bars a day, or you can buy, you know, an expensive toy, why shouldn't you do it? Well, you shouldn't do it just because you ought to have a reason for it, other than just because I love you so you can have whatever you want. There needs to be some sense of working for things that your efforts are important. And again, you know, when we look at people, and I see this in my practice a lot, the most important thing parents can do with kids is spend time with them. You know, not indulgent time, not being their buddy, not being the cheerleader for the kid who's sitting on the bench, telling him how great they are. The kid knows how good they are. You don't have to tell him or distort it. But to just spend time with them, listen to them, see what's important to them. Try to help them along. But, you know, the kid tells you they think they're interested in drones. You don't have to go buy them a $500 drone that day. Help them show that they're interested and committed to doing that in some way before you go make the effort. And I think that's what parents can do. You know, we're capable of doing a lot of things for people that we don't do, that we can do, but we have to pull back a little, I think. And that's sort of what's different. I think it's hard for parents to do that.
Hard for parents to say, I'm not going to do this right now.
Yeah, and particularly when they're rushed. You know, if you're busy working a lot or you're running around doing your own, you know, you're overscheduled yourself, it's hard to take time out. You know, it's the kind of thing they always say. There's an old country music song about Just Like Dad, where the kid keeps saying, hey, Dad, let's do this. And Dad says, I'm too busy now. We'll do it later. And the kid grows up. And all of a sudden, the dad's an old guy, and he says to his kid, hey, you know, let's go do something. The kid says, yeah, I'd love to, Dad, but I'm too busy.
And Harry Chapin, Cat's Cradle.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what you need to take time out. You know, you only have that time. They're only there for a little while. You need to spend time with them.
And make it quality time. Let's take a call. Here is Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with George Glass. His book is The Overparenting Epidemic.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Glass. I really appreciate
your
book. It sounds like it sounds like you and I grew up in the same era, like the 50s, and I was lucky enough to have a lot of empty lots in my neighborhood to enjoy a tremendous amount of unsupervised play in, and that was, I think, really good for me. And my concern I currently work with preschool-age kids, and my concern is that I see them being pushed to "quote unquote," succeed way too early. Not by the school that I work in, which is a Head Start school, but the greatest pressure seems to be coming from governmental policies that are completely ignorant of the real developmental needs of toddlers and preschools, and are currently pushing kindergartners to be first graders, if not second graders, and are trying to push preschools into turning their preschoolers into first graders. And so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
All right. Thanks for that, Sandy. George?
Well, I think, you know, I think you really touch on it, which is we have five kids. And the lady earlier called and said, you know, she grew up in a house with six kids. You know, if you have more than one kid, you know that one size doesn't fit all and that you have to, they're all different. You know, some kids are interested in music. Some kids are interested in sports. Some kids love to do math or languages. They're all different, and I don't think you can push them into something until they find out what it is for them. I mean, I was reading an article yesterday in the paper about Muhammad Ali and his brother, and they grew up. He grew up in a lower middle class neighborhood, but he wasn't academically very smart, but he was very witty and he was charismatic long before he became a world famous person. That's a skill, that's a gift that needs to be appreciated, and you know, people don't appreciate that everybody's different. Even your own kids in your family, and you have to support and understand what they're good at, rather than that you think every kid should be a doctor, a lawyer, an entrepreneur, something else. And if they don't want to do that, what happens is they get resentful and sabotage it or don't do it. Or you get frustrated and it escalates. It reminds me, there was a story several weeks ago in the newspaper about a 30-year-old a boy who killed his father, who was a hedge fund manager, because of what appears to be, it's not allegedly killed him, allegedly there was a fight about money, And, you know, a second article wrote about how, in fact, this young man had gone to Princeton, graduated. He's 30 years old. And you know, it's almost, I don't know the story. I don't really know, except that somebody obviously pushed him. You don't go to Princeton. Not just you're not dumb, but you have to be motivated and jump through all the right checklist to go there. So all of a sudden, you know, he like graduates. What does he do next? That 7 years later, he's not making enough money that he has to fight with his father and kill him because he's not getting a bigger allowance or something. It's almost like they get pushed and they get pushed and then they're done. They don't know what to do next.
Because the track has been decided for them, and they haven't had to use their own thoughts and imaginations.
They haven't had to do their own thoughts. It's a little bit like that old, again, we're talking about you know, old media stuff. That old Robert Redford film, The Candidate, where he's a colorful, charismatic environmental lawyer who gets pushed to run for Senate. He gets elected. He's got a aggressive campaign manager. He gets elected. So after the election, he turns to the campaign manager. He says, now what do I do?
Yeah, so what do we do now, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm senator, so what? Now what do I do? And it's the same thing with the kid. Kids get to a certain point, and then what do? Well, what they do is their mother goes to their college interviews, or their parents go to their job interviews, which is not unheard of. I mean, I have parents coming to see me for 40-year-old children. I mean, they're not children, obviously. They're adults, about their child doesn't like this treatment program or that treatment program for their substance abuse problem. You have to, you know, by the time they're 40 years old, they either need to take care of themselves or not. Or by the time they get out of college, anybody who'd hire a person whose parent goes with them to the job interview knows that's a problem employee before they ever start work.
Way back at the introduction, I set this up by talking about the fact that that the baby boomer kids generally didn't know seat belts until they were well into their teens, didn't know bicycle helmets, and a lot of the things that are used to cushion kids physically from things today. And you bring up in the book things like banning of balls in certain schools, so there can't be any balls in the playground anymore. It's a kind of a hard concept to get across, but it seems like everybody from the baby boom generation has a story about stitches to tell. And parents seem deathly afraid of having their kids get into a situation where they're going to get hurt.
You know, and I don't know why. I mean, you know, medicine is, you know, if you're not pushing yourself, you know, it's like skiing. If you're not falling, you're not learning, basically. You know, parents are reluctant to do that. They want to make it easier. They don't want their kids to suffer. You know, the idea is, you know, somebody said earlier, boredom's not bad. Boredom allows you to be creative. You know, getting hurt, you learn to do something differently. The idea that that we have to be politically correct, that every kid on the team ought to get a trophy. You know, even the kid who doesn't do anything, just because we want to be nice. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. The truth is, sometimes if you get your feelings hurt, it makes people work harder to do better in whatever it is, whether it's, you know, spelling bees, baseball, or anything else. If you get your feelings hurt, you don't come out number one or number two, or you're not homogenized where everybody gets the same team award. It makes you want to perform better. And yet, you know, that gets lost sight of, I think, in this era.
There's a bit in here, obviously, on schools, as there needs to be. The concept of school as co-parent can certainly be difficult for a parent who thinks they know best anyway. But I want to come to the other side of things, which is the general societal view of schools right now, which is that they need a lot of help, they just don't work. And I wonder how much that is an influence upon the behavior that parents demonstrate towards their kids in their schools.
Well, you know, the idea is on the one hand, parents oftentimes don't spend as much time with their children as I think they should, and what they end up doing is delegating or hiring, and hiring becomes coaches, it becomes tutors, it becomes somebody to write their papers, that sort of thing. but it also becomes the school, where the school, you know, people's parents send their kids to the schools, and the school is supposed to do what the parents did, which is teach them values, teach them discipline. And yet the schools get no support. You know, the idea people oftentimes in this era think, you know, it's not that a great teacher is a great teacher. If you have somebody who's bright, who's, you know, relatively young, who's a teacher, the first reaction is, gee, I wonder what the matter with them is. You know, why aren't they doing something like productive where they can make a lot of money? Not that, you know, a lot of people love teaching, and it's, and they love kids. And instead of, you know, valuing that and supporting it, they undermine it. So on the one hand, they send the kids to school to not just be educated, but to have discipline and values. And then they undermine that process by not supporting the teachers. As soon as the child comes home and says, you know, mommy, so-and-so teacher doesn't like me or something, the parents pick up the phone and they call the headmaster or the headmistress or the principal and say, you know, I want to change my child's class. They don't get along with the teacher. Instead of trying to help the child process that and work it through.
So ultimately it gets down to, it sounds like the parents have to relax enough to realize that the kids can learn a few things on their own. Now, in an age of electronics, when their first place to go is to stick their faces in a screen, how do you find ways for them to do something constructive that doesn't involve a cell phone or an Xbox?
I think you limit the amount of time. You know, you tell the kids that, you know, you have so much time. You can't take your cell phone to school. You can't sit at the dining room table. You know, you have to have your home. You do your homework, and then you can play, you know, the electronic stuff or watch TV. It used to be when TV first came out, like somebody earlier said, you know, the guy who used to have all the lots he'd go play on. You know, families would limit the TV to, you know, an hour a day or certain shows during the week. Now it's a babysitter between the handheld games and the electronic games and the television. It's all delegated.
All right, the book is called The Overparenting Epidemic, Why Helicopter Parenting is Bad for Your Kids and Dangerous for You Too. Dr. George S. Glass, psychiatrist from Houston, is its principal author. He's been our guest. George, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Just remember, you're the parent. You're the one who's supposed to be in charge here.
All right, well said.